Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 19th day of May 2020, and my name is Peter Wickham. It's good to be with you on another day and to have the opportunity to engage in our national dialogue, which has become very popular of late, often cantankerous, but nonetheless, hopefully informative and enjoyable to all of you. This morning, you have Mr. Dennis Johnson. He is in one studio. I'm in the other studio. Dennis makes sure that all goes well on technical side and also makes sure that we don't run afoul of the law or anyone else's rights. My job is to take your calls and listen to you and give you my opinion from time to time. And remember, we are on the until 2 p.m. And at that point in time, we will break, and then we're here from 9 o'clock. So Dennis and I are with you from 10 until 2. The normal procedure is that we start with what we call preparatory remarks and lay the groundwork for the conversation to follow. Just yesterday, the gentleman that follows me in the studio, one of the titans of radio, played a calypso from back in the 90s, and he introduced a gentleman called Dr. Schlossberg. I've never really been sure of the pronunciation of his name. And I thought it was rather timely that Dr. Schlossberg's intervention or Dr. Schlossberg's name be mentioned at this point in time, because he would have been the person who raised concerns about the issue of HIV and our attitudes towards HIV treatment. It was an interesting coincidence because Schlossberg, as I understand it, was a consultant to the Ministry of Health or the Ministry of Queen Elizabeth Hospital, or he was working in some capacity in that regard, but he was retained. He was unhappy about the situation where we were dealing with HIV. He felt that our sexual practices as a nation were out of control. That's another conversation altogether. But the important thing was that he brought ranks and he made a public statement in what he called the national interest. He said that he thought that our policy was all wrong, it was going nowhere, and he expressed a view in what he thought was a professional interest. Now, he was not Barbadian, but that was irrelevant. The point is that he came here to do a job, he stepped outside of the zone, and he offered his professional opinion. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Because you can begin to see the corresponding realities to which I'm speaking now. I'm sure that you're able to make those comparisons. So Dr. Schlossberg had his say, and he expressed his views and opinions. He annoyed, and he felt that Dr. Schlossberg had expressed a professional opinion with which he disagreed, but was also concerned that he stepped outside of his remit. So you see the similarities that we're having really regarding this current incident. And let's be clear, doctors have the right, certainly, to express professional opinions in the national interest. That was being done then. But we also realize that doctors fundamentally will always disagree. Political scientists disagree. Lawyers disagree. So doctors will disagree. And it is not surprising that from time to time, we will have these kinds of incidents where doctors disagree and offer opinion one way or the other. So that's that for that issue. I don't know whether it will come up again today. I understand it came up yesterday. And if it does, then, you know, so be it. The other thing I was interested in is I saw a story in the paper yesterday about a church that had been apparently ground zero for a number of infections, which are unexplained. They trace the three of them back to this church, which was one of the smaller churches located in the city, I believe, and they were the ground zero for, or they were source, apparently, of infection. And I have to steal this comment from one of my Facebook friends who has expressed concern, and I agree with him entirely. We have almost daily a parade of people who are being charged by the courts across the front page of the paper, showing that they have had fetes and parties. The most recent one was a set of people who had a party at a location and decided to flout the laws, the COVID laws, and flout the state of emergency. And they were arrested and given the criminal treatment that they deserved. My concern is that why is it that there's all this secrecy surrounding what happened at this church? I would like the persons who are responsible for that church, the pastor in charge, it can't be hard to find that person, to be paraded across the public eye. Because the fact that you are ministering to your faithful is absolutely no different to the fact that persons decide to hold a party in effect. It's the same criminal treatment that you deserved. And I believe that if you are common criminals for breaking the law, then we ought to be able to see who these people are. We ought to be able to see the what is called the perp walk, where they are paraded across and so on. And I think that that's entirely reasonable. So I don't understand why the secrecy, and certainly I do feel that the public needs to be entitled to a bit more details regarding this matter. So those are my two key issues for today. There are a couple of other things that I want to mention, and maybe I will when the opportunity arises during the course of this morning. So for the time being, let me just say that you can call us on 434-1790. You can also email us at brasstax@vob.com. You can email me directly, which is what I would prefer, at peter.wwickham@gmail.com. And then, of course, we have the chat 266-IVOB. So we say good morning and welcome to the first caller. Good morning or welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Ma, you boring?
What is Anti-America? Okay, good to hear you.
You are a boring character. You know that, eh?
Well, that ain't a problem. You're here to bring excitement.
You are boring.
I feel honored that the first conversation I have with you, we have today, is with you. So.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually, I woke up just now, about 2 seconds ago.
I woke you up?
Ma, I don't know. But you hear a beat. I hear beeping the phone, so he figure, well, hey, it's probably my turn to talk. So you talk all that time just now?
Yeah, come on, man. Imagine that.
But one thing, though, when the point was raised with you last week about the name, those two guys are related?
Which two guys?
The two doctors that were involved with the AIDS and now with this thing. The same name, same last name.
Auntie America, but you playing games. You know very well that they're related.
I don't know that they're related. But if it means that, of course, you have a certain gene that makes people stand out in public, well, that needs to be exposed as well. I mean, you know, I
know, but what's the significance of the relationship? I don't understand that the two individuals are competent in their own right. They made a contribution in their own right. What's the point you're trying to make, that the fact that they're related?
I just asked a simple question. I mean, I don't want to have no background check or anything. So I just want to know, is it yes or no? If they're related, well, they're related. Let's move on. Yeah, the problem is,
but how does the answer is yes, they're related, and how does that impact?
Okay, cool. Because I actually thought it was one and the same. I actually thought it was the same person that was coming again, then I realized it was a younger person. So, I mean, okay, but fine. Ain't got a problem with that. They're good. There's nothing in it. There's just a question. And you didn't answer it last week, and you thought it was offensive, so. No, obviously, you brought the same thing up again, so obviously it can't be that offensive. Be good. All right, here's the thing, though. All right? A response to a virus. Viruses will do what viruses will do. You can't protect against them. The common cold has been with us from the time we were, 600,000 years ago, probably till now. You can't deal with the viruses. They're too small. They're not even considered to be living species.
Mm-hmm.
They're like bacteria or fungus that actually are alive. A virus is not even a living thing. You can't do nothing with them there. This whole concept about crossing from bats to humans and crossing from chickens to human beings or cows or whatever. It's something that needs to be properly explored. But frankly, you know, I got my doubts about that there too. But the point is, you got a virus to deal with, and there ain't gonna be no vaccine to deal with no damn virus. The question is not the virus. The question is how you respond to it.
Right.
No, it seems as if that this. Oh, you gonna let me talk or you gonna want? You want
to
talk?
I'm listening to you, but I'm hoping that you move a little more briskly.
Oh, okay. So
you have a tendency to talk long, and I don't want to be anybody to complain that you're bored.
Talk for 7 minutes.
Great.
7 minutes. I don't want to.
Moderator's privilege.
I talk fast, man. I talk much faster than you do anyway. So the thing about this is that the virus has to be responded to, because next year you're going to have another one. The year after that, it seems as if this virus thing has now replaced international terrorism as being the major threat to humanity. These virus things. So you have to respond in a way to ensure that if it happens again, you're not going to be shutting down nothing. I think a shutdown was the absolutely wrong response. I've always thought that. I don't think that a prime minister in his right mind would shut down anything for no virus like this here. But I think it was...
What about her right mind?
Sorry?
Her right mind.
Well, yeah, but normally you got more hisses than hers, so you got to say his, man. You only got with 7 hers anyhow, in a population of what? 120-something prime ministers. And they all shut down. I do not believe that none of them would have considered that to be a sensible move. Because if you consider the whole world as one nation, what are you going to do? Partition it based on some political demographic? You know, shutting down to deal with a virus that will have its way anyway. You have to find a way to respond to a virus in a way that if it happens again, you ain't got to deal with this. Put everybody at risk. Mm. Everybody, because the risk of starvation, risk of losing a word that you never come back and you have again and that kind of thing, you have to respond in a way that that never happens. And one aspect of that response has to be recognizing, you know, do like Cuba, be self-reliant. Rely on what you can do for your own. You know, be
okay.
In a...
Question.
You want to talk? No, you want to talk.
Question. No, I'm just asking you a question because I do appreciate that the shutdown approach was used in, I think, all but one country in the Caribbean shut down completely, which is St. Vincent.
Shut down, I'm sorry, which one?
St. Vincent.
St. Vincent did not shut down.
They didn't shut down, no.
I like that game real bad, though. I do.
I think in the Europe, it would be Switzerland that hasn't shut down.
Okay.
The United States of America shut down but opening back up. The point I'm making is that if it is that our leadership is on the wrong path, our leadership is in very good company. Prime Minister of Sweden and the Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines know that the rest of us don't know? You tell me.
Good God. Look how you're going to shift this conversation now. This is not about right and wrong path. It could very well be that they all took instructions to shut down. But that's what you guys are.
And from who?
The WHO would have said you got to shut down. So the question is, why are you going to shut down? The Caribbean has a lot of... You know, I like St. Vincent because they have always had prime ministers that can respond differently. They had a prime minister of St. Vincent that decided, look, all we're going up there to some international talk, I got better time than that. They're going to go and do this... Albaros... The national hero Albaros' best friend was Vincentian. I can't remember his name, but... He was like that. He's I'm going to go and talk with that foolishness. Go long, I got better ways to spend my time. St. Vincent always produces those kinds of leaders, you know? And I'm grateful for St. Vincent. I really am. Oh, he had a problem with his son. That is fine. But I think perhaps he did the right thing.
What was the problem he had with his son?
We can't.
What was the problem he had with his son?
No, his son got involved with some activity a few years ago, and it caused the women in St. Vincent to respond in a certain way. All right, and they also spread to Barbados where we had a certain kind of...
I love your phrasing of the incident. He got involved in an incident?
Well, okay, fine, but you distracting, man. Come on, let me talk. Now you want me off?
What was the incident he got involved in?
I have no idea. That ain't got nothing to do with COVID. So if you want to deal with that, let me talk about that next year or something, man. But you even know if... No, that's a different matter altogether. But I do like that guy. I actually do. I think he's too old to be a prime minister now anyhow. So maybe next election he will step down. I have a younger guy come forward. Mm. I think once you pass 60 years old, you're too old. I'm sorry, move on to something else. All right, that's my opinion. Between 45 and 60 is the best time for prime minister. Other than that, you're too old. Move on. So, yeah, I like that guy, and I think he's done the right thing. Unfortunately, Barbados is not free to do the same thing as well because we are a tourist industry. If it tell us shut down, we got no choice. We got shut down. If it tell you open the doors so that the people from the cruise ship can pass through and go home, we got open the doors for the people from the... Because that is our major business. So I understand our position. It's not that she's in the right position. She's fault. She has no choice. If it says shut down, you got to shut down because we are too reliant on the international, circumstances in order to survive in the real world. So that is not a matter of right and wrong. It's that you ain't got a damn choice. That's it. So forget what these are. These are just there as a face, a figure. You know, these are telling me to do that. They're sorry doing that. These are taking instructions for somebody else. It's not. I have no problems with that. I'm just saying to you that you have to respond to a virus, respond to it correctly. And that is to say that you have the best, most healthy, citizenry that is available. You have to make sure that your citizens are fit and healthy because these viruses take care of the ones who are not that fit, who are like Dennis. Dennis got problems, you know. Probably Dennis's problems are genetic in some way, but truth be told, the viruses take care of them. They don't take care. I'm fit, you know. I'm only 35 years old and I get to go. I don't have to worry.
You think that you're fit?
I think I'm fit, yes. I ain't got no conditions. I don't have that.
That's an objective opinion, or that's... Because from what I can see, you don't look fit to me.
No, well, you don't even know who you're talking to, my friend. I'm 35 years old. I'm a fit individual. I ain't got nothing to worry about. The virus is not going to affect me. The virus is not going to affect 96% of the population of Barbados. No, it's true. because you are responding to a particular circumstance with a very, very small kill rate. Less than 1% of the population. And here's the thing. If you have to go and shut down a country, the whole of CARICOM should come together and determine what the standard should be. We will not shut down from this point.
You've spoken...
Let me finish the last sentence. Sorry, last sentence. We will not shut down Barbados or Antigua or St. Vincent for a virus unless the kill rate is over 1%. And you got some kind of measure of, infectivity? Because this thing about virulence is not good enough. You have to have a kill rate of a certain amount, and you have to have a certain kind of infectivity.
All right. Infectivity. I like that word. All right. I have a comment here from someone online. All right. Stick a pin, Auntie. I have a comment here from someone online. The person is saying, why is fast talking Auntie referring to COVID-19 as this virus thing? He's a total embarrassment to the law school where he studied for several years. He's jumping like a grasshopper all over the place, and he is annoying. Your response, sir?
So wait, he ad hominem.
I don't know if it's he or she. It's a comment.
Ad hominem. You attack me as opposed to attacking what was being said.
I'm just telling you what the WhatsApp said in terms of what you were saying specifically, right?
I'm saying to you, if you shut down, you have to have
a kind of policy. In terms of what is being said specifically, Auntie, these are my concerns about what you have said.
Okay.
I think that in many ways, the shutdown was total and incomplete. There are aspects of it that I do not fully understand. For example, I am uncomfortable with the whole concept of a curfew, because the curfew presumes that at night, the virus will not have the same impact it will have during the day.
Okay, fine, fair enough.
That is something that I have never fully understood. And I understand that it was done to discourage social activity and people selling on the streets at night and whatnot.
Right.
And my position has always been that what you need to do is you need to ensure a level of social distancing. If you can get that ingrained in people's head, then you can open supermarkets 24 hours a day. And I have always felt that the idea of closing supermarkets was essentially the lowest point in terms of this whole exercise.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Having said that, however, I've gone on record of saying that I support the authorities in their efforts to deal with this thing. It's clear that they knew things that I didn't know, and I'm comfortable with that. But certainly to the extent that your view has been put in the public domain, my sense is that I do feel that some of the curfews went too far. Grenada, for example, took a position to shut down the country even before they had any cases, in the belief that they would never have any cases, and they still ended up with cases. Because the fact is that we have learned from this thing that it's a silent killer in the sense that it steps into your domain.
But
Auntie, let me talk now. I let you ramble on and talk.
All right, because they figure you'll cut me before
you... As the lady said, an embarrassment to large school. I thought you went to college, though.
I went to college, man. Here's the thing, all right? I grew up rolling up in...
Yo, final closing remark from you, because we're going to have to move on.
The approach, if you sanitize people, all of us are human beings. We have got this thing called an immune system that kept us alive for 500,000 years. We've been dealing with viruses for all this time. We've got millions of viruses out there, inside of our bodies and outside. If you can't handle viruses, we will be gone. Sanitizing is like saying, my God, your body doesn't deserve the respect that it requires.
Okay.
Because we can deal with this virus. We
all right, sir.
Deal with it. All you're doing is you're responding
to Auntie America,
even worse.
I want to thank you for bowling the opening ball. One of the things I meant to mention, I was actually looking for my notes as I was speaking just now. What I meant to mention when we opened is this whole controversy relating to the question of cutting salaries and the National Union Public Workers response. I had the good fortune to speak to a nurse yesterday who was making the point that she felt, in light of what has transpired, that what we should have is not a cut in salaries or an offer of bonds that are for savings. What we should have instead is an increase or bonus that should be offered to healthcare workers that have been on the front line. In theory, I don't disagree with her. In theory, I agree that people who have been on the front line and who have been working in essential services definitely need a little bump up because of the hazardous conditions to which they have exposed themselves while the vast majority of us were at home, safely locked away. The reality, however, and this is something that I think the NUPW leadership has to understand, is that the reality is that the impact of this thing is a long-term problem for Barbados economically. When you consider that the tourism sector, which is the lifeblood of the economy, has been virtually wiped out overnight, I will probably not recover until maybe the winter tourist season next year, if we are lucky. And if not, next year, summer. We have a problem on our hands that is very serious. And it's okay to say, I deserve a bonus. Of course you deserve a bonus. But the fact of the matter is that it is not a question of whether the NUPW is saying that there are people that got car loans and got house payments that they can't make if you cut the salaries. We are in a situation where it's a simple problem. Government will shortly not have the resources to pay people. And it's not a question of saying, I want to give you bonds. It's a question of saying, if you don't take the bonds, we can have a challenge determining where we can find the money from to pay you. And I know people are talking about the size of the cabinet and whatnot. That is not an issue. The issue really is the fundamental capacity of government to be able to reward public servants and to pay them something when the end of the month comes. And I get NUPW's position, but I think that this issue has to be framed in terms of our capacity. People don't understand that unless we have boats coming in, unless we have tourists coming in, our capacity to tax the private sector to pay for public servants has been reduced. Private sector activity has been reduced considerably. I'm hearing estimations like 40 and 50%. When you look at that and you look at the fact that the revenue will also be slashed, it means that whether they like it or not, government is not in a position to fund the public service in the way that it would have before. So something got to give. So let's all try to be reasonable. And I appreciate that none of us wants to have to not make the car payments. None of us wants to have to negotiate with a bank regarding the arrangement for mortgage. None of us wants to give up any of the things that we worked hard to achieve. But the reality of the situation is that I don't really know that a lot of us are going to have a choice shortly. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad, are you?
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
The first thing I want to start out on, they mean well in distributing these funds to the government. But this is where the problem lies. When you distribute funds to the government, these funds then go on to the constituency office where they provide the necessary basket of goods for the constituents in that office. But apparently, I told somebody a time ago that what Sandin should have done is that for other organizations independent of government, say it's like the Rotary Club or the Women Club, something like that, and distribute these funds to these clubs so that it will not appear or seems to the view of the population, which is a political gesture from the government. I also went on to say that, how do I know that if I visit constituency, it's a Michael Sanctuary, that I will get one of these vouchers or one of these hampers? You see?
And this, you asked for what?
Pardon me?
You asked for what?
If I asked for what?
Have you applied for social assistance?
Sir, there's one thing in life I have learned from my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you this right. She always said, as poor as you are, never ask the police for anything or ask anything.
No. Have you applied to any of the government agencies for social assistance?
I would never do that.
Okay.
You see, you got this.
Do you know anyone who has?
Of course.
Have they been able to achieve or to receive any assistance?
A little something there. I think the first set of basket of goods there. When I look at it, it was just the usual normal thing: onions, potatoes, corned beef, sardines, tuna fish.
What would you like them to have received?
Pardon me?
What would you like them to have received?
I never thought I would like them to receive anything. I just know what I saw.
Okay.
This is
my difficulty with your logic, right?
Mm.
I can see you and a lot of other people who support the Democratic Labour Party.
But why you always bring this Democratic Labour Party?
All right, but hold on, because that's how I am seeing it. Have a problem with the fact that any agency has given members of parliament in their capacity as members of parliament, the resources to help people. That's your difficulty. I saw something in the newspaper today from Granville Phillips. I have asked Granville Phillips to stop sending me emails.
Why is that?
Because I find I am not interested in anything he has to say. Granville Phillips has no legitimacy in my mind as an opposition force. And Granville Phillips is in the newspaper saying that what the agency Sandy Lane Trust should do is it should divide up all the money among political parties. So Natalie should get some too, as far as I'm concerned. If we're going to do that, Natalie as an independent should get some too.
No, I, I,
But she get 100 votes, so she should get some of the money too to give away to people. What nonsense is this? Sir, listen, listen, let's be clear. Let's be clear. When you are elected as a member of parliament, you are not elected as a member of parliament for no B or no D. You are elected as a member of parliament to assist people, full stop.
But I'm still saying...
Full stop. And you know what? I remember well, and I made a comment on this radio program. I have had the poorest relations with the Democratic Labour Party over the last few years. Everybody knows that. I remember when the incident occurred in Dominica, and I had a crisis that needed to have been resolved. I made two phone calls, one to the Minister of Education and the other one to the Minister of Health. And in no time at all, those matters were resolved. And I remember saying to the gentlemen, both of them, I feel bad to be calling to ask for something because in the final analysis, I know I have not enjoyed the best relations with people. And to his credit, Jones said, this is not about BRD, Peter. This is a crisis in the Caribbean in relation to Hurricane. We have to do what we can to help our brothers and sisters. And I made a comment on the radio. And I'm saying to you that you have to understand that there are points in times when people move from being a BLP or DLP representative to being a member of parliament with responsibility for everyone. So everyone in every constituency can go to the member of parliament for assistance regardless of their political complexion. And you know what? Quite a few people have. One member of parliament told me that in a particular time span, he spent $50,000 buying food for people, right? In his constituency to ensure that they had something to eat. That's a serious thing. No, I'm saying that when you look at some members of parliament, they have the capacity to do that on their own. But there are other members of parliament that don't have that capacity. So what the Sandilian Trust is doing is saying that all of the members of parliament who are likely to be on ground zero regarding the request for assistance have the capacity to respond to the extent of $50,000 a person. I think that's what it is. So that should be able to take care of a few meals and to take care of a few people. I would like to think, right, that whether they be the PDP representative, whether they be the BLP representative, that none of them will be so petty and so nasty to think that that money is only for BLP supporters.
I wouldn't say that, but I would say...
All right, so that's my view. You could offer yours and you can move to the next topic. I think the argument is silly.
I don't think so. I think my view is it's going to remain the same. I have
no problem.
Where and how it was done, as simple as that.
All right, well,
you are not going to convince me.
No problem. But as I say, you can offer your view on what I said, and then you can move on to the next point.
Yeah, let me move on to the next point.
Right.
This is my final point. It has to do with the hospital, running the hospital. Mm-hmm. I happened to have a date here on the... I was given an appointment on the thing to the... I went there 3 weeks ago. And they gave me an appointment on the... I think it was the 15th of December. And I asked the nurse if she could refer this appointment date. She told me, no, that they're rather full. But I then went on to see a private doctor to ask words concerning this problem, which I'm looking after for an elderly near a friend of mine. And I was told that the problem can be solved, but the person will have to, we are looking at between $37,000 and $35,000. Now, that person is in no financial position to pay that sort of money. I then was trying to get on to contact with the director of the QH, because I think this problem might be kind of urgency, and I don't think it might be one that could sustain the date that they've given us in the hospital. Anyhow, to make matters worse, she is saying that that the problem is that there is shortage of doctors in this particular area at the hospital, and therefore, due to the fact that all these appointments run to that time, the gentleman don't have an option, but if you have the money, you can go on and pay. I then asked her where he's going to get the money from. Well, you know, all that conversation ended up. But my thing about it is that, since we are the director of the hospital, Mr. Biner, I am finding that, as I said, getting better years ago, it's gotten worse. And I know, see why people that have money do not go to that hospital. And that's my final word, Mr. Peter Vickers.
All right, fair enough. All right, sir, I want to thank you for your contribution, spicing up the program a bit. I have another WhatsApp here from a lady who is complaining about the fact that people are not getting help. I will read it as it has been sent. So that I'm in a house where no one is working. The Prime Minister sent aid that included bread and stuff, eggs, and a voucher 1 week in March. I haven't called since then because there has been no follow-up call. Sorry, there's been no follow-up call since then and no assistance that has been received. There are 5 adults and 5 children in the house. Older daughter is with her 4 children because the light is off at the house and they can't afford to pay. Politicians need to stop grandstanding and help persons in need. Single father of a disabled son also messaged me last night. Up to now, no help was offered to him. So who really are the vulnerable people in the country? Who really is benefiting from government? And to this, I would simply ask a question. If you are not making an appeal to an agency for assistance, how exactly is one supposed to know that assistance is needed? And I appreciate that what the lady seems to be saying is that my representative should know my situation. And the reality is that her situation is bad, and I can guarantee you that there are wrong people. There are people around whose situation is far worse. And if a situation presents itself where someone presents themselves for assistance at a constituency office or otherwise, it is probably more likely that they will get assistance than the fact that you have to rest assured that I know that I live in a house and nobody ain't working. I mean, people, let's be a bit more reasonable about how we approach the situation. If you say to me, I called the assistance number, and nobody answer, and nobody call me back, and I ain't getting nothing. That's something that we could discuss. But don't say to me that I got assistance 1 week, and I ain't hearing nothing since. I mean, come off it. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Hello, hi, good morning.
Morning, sir. How you going?
I'm good, man.
You in a better mood this week?
How? Because I brushed you up last week. You was a good man.
That's the problem. I like that. And I think callers like that too. I think that the listeners like to hear the Titans clash.
Well, I don't think that you thin skin and that can.
No, not at all. If I saw, it would be in the wrong job.
I think that you like to be cheerful about things, don't you? Yeah. Right? But I ain't calling.
It makes the day go faster.
Yeah, you know, but I would say this to you, though. I do not understand why it is that it is this belief that you got to agree with the moderator, or moderator got to agree with you. But in your case, though, I find, look, let me put this up front. You see the fast-talking guy that you call anti-America? I never liked that name, anti-America. I label he as the fast-talking guy, right? I will listen to he the whole day. But I find often enough, and he gives me something to ponder on, which, like, you also give me something to ponder on. When you talk about religions and church and God and all that thing, you know that I just take religion now and the God talk with a pinch of salt. And you're responsible for that.
And I'm happy to hear this.
But I will say this to you.
So I got to start with you putting the pork now. So.
No. I don't think you will get through that way. But I will say this to you. Mm-hmm. The fast-talking guy this morning also gives the same to ponder on. Mm-hmm. I would like to know how much street characters, I would like to know how much homeless people catch the virus. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily by name, okay? But just to show you that what the man was saying this morning probably got a point.
But we discussed that. Didn't they discuss it with you?
You understand what I'm saying? So, and the man always comes with something different. But then you on the other side, you choose to read a nasty email. I'm saying to you, I am saying to you, everybody know he, everybody know me, everybody know Peter. Why these people hiding behind WhatsApp messages and things, and you, some of you moderators like to pull out the dirty WhatsApp messages.
The dirt helps to make the program interesting. And I know that he can handle the dirt too, don't worry.
He can handle it. He likes that.
So that's it. He's like me. He enjoys a bit of controversy and so on.
Yeah, I know that.
And that's really the dirty ones when they're talking about me too.
And listen, let me say something to you, right?
But no, the point you made just now, and I don't want to miss the opportunity to comment on that. The point you made just now about vagrants, we had that conversation already, and I was saying, I thought it was you, maybe it was somebody else. I said
that.
It wasn't me. I'm always fascinated by the fact that vagrants tend not to get sick with the kinds of things that will floor us. And one of the points is that I think a vagrant, by virtue of the fact that the person lives on the street, lives outdoors, and is still alive, their immune system has to be fairly robust.
Right.
Because if their immune system was not robust, they would have died a long time ago. So it's like this selective, you know, whatever that we talk about in evolution. And the other point is that I think that vagrants don't come into contact with a lot of people because nobody wants to touch them, right? So the likelihood of your infecting a vagrant is low because you're not going up in the person's face. You're not going to cough on them or sneeze on them. You're not even going to touch them. Invariably, when you give a vagrant money, you just drop it.
Peter, in some receptacle or something.
Not really. You sit down anywhere that vagrant is sit down.
Pardon me?
Sir, I would see vagrants sitting down on a bus stop bench.
Yeah.
Right? And you can rest assured that nobody ain't going anywhere around that bench.
Well,
for a good while.
He might go and touch the bus stop or something.
Where Ninja Man live around the Bounty Treasury building? You see anybody going up under there?
I really don't know.
No.
Don't forget other country boy, you know.
People don't really touch up vagrants, so. And that to me is the two important points regarding anti-America. I agree with you that it's interesting that vagrants have not been infected, but I think that those are the two factors that we have to take into consideration. Most of us can't live like vagrants because most of us want to be touched. And most of us want to touch. Right?
I want to touch.
Most of us want to touch, you know.
Right. I want touch. I tell people after, like, I don't want to hear a fellow voice.
Yeah.
Let me talk to females. however, and if I talk into them, I guarantee you I want to touch the two.
Yeah, but not anybody else's home. For the time being, you need to touch the ones home by you. And if you are lucky to have more than one home by you, then, you know, you're in good ground.
You're suggesting that I probably got a female at home?
I'm assuming that you should have one or two, if you are lucky.
Let me burst your bubble. I don't have any at home.
But then social distancing rules would state that you should not, if they don't come within your curtilage, you should not be going beyond their curtilage.
No, you won't tell me where you should go, though.
But that is what the rules is, what law says.
What rules
you're supposed to be pulling out nobody else.
Anyhow,
curtilage.
You're my personal business. I won't say this to you.
Right.
I must disagree also with you, right? And probably for the first time ever that I'm going to agree with your last scholar, the very last scholar, right? This Sandy Lane handout, I think it has... Send a message to me that I don't like.
Who would you prefer them to have given the money to?
I agree. I agree that they could be a better. This money was in voucher, right?
I don't know why it was, but what I'm saying is, what would be the other mechanism?
$50,000. $50,000 per.
I speak subject to correction, but I believe it was $60,000 per constituency. $50,000, yeah.
And you're saying to me the onus body in the constituency that should be able to control or handle that kind of money to distribute is the politician.
Who should distribute it then?
I am saying to you that I sure to have agencies around every constituency.
Like whom?
But hello. Listen, man. We got to put myself to the test with that, right?
But no, put yourself to the test and tell me who.
If it has to be a constituency office, why the constituency office could not, instead of the politician fella or lady going down to the supermarket and putting up a little fruit basket or gift basket, why I cannot, a man that is in need, cannot have or receive a voucher that I could go to the supermarket or the village shop of my choice and redeem the voucher.
But why are you creating another tier of bureaucracy?
But that's all I'm saying.
Hold on a second. When we are trying to keep...
Regardless of how you might say it, regardless of how you might look at it, some people are so pretty that they got their pride intact.
I understand all of that, but...
Desperately poor, Peter, let me say something. And desperately poor, I don't think they want to see any politician pulling up in front of the house with a gift basket. I think that I don't think that is the role of a politician. Look, I really don't.
All right. Can I give my perspective? No. You are trying to discourage people from going in a supermarket to start with. You're trying to deal with overcrowding and so on. And you're saying to me that the solution is to give people vouchers. How will you determine eligibility for those vouchers? How can you determine the eligibility for those vouchers?
I am saying to you, every person got a supermarket day, right? At least got two of
you. Right. How are you going to determine the eligibility for those vouchers?
There got to be some way.
But then the point is that they found a way. You know what's important? The important thing is that right now there are people who can't eat. And right now, there's an agency that says, I want to find the fastest way to get money to people who cannot eat. And we have no community-based mechanism or no constituency mechanism that covers the whole island. So okay. It's the default mechanism. You remember some years ago, I think it was the Chinese embassy in St. Lucia gave the individual MPs $1 million to help with different things in a constituency, right? And it was given to all the MPs, not only MPs from UWP or Labour. They were given to all of the members of Parliament. And a lot of people complained and said that was not the appropriate mechanism. But you know what, sir? It is the only mechanism available. And I remember the Labour Peter? Party people said they weren't taking it.
Peter?
Yes, sir.
Peter, if I may say this, right? I know you cough at what Granville Phillips II had to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you argue a position or a point for the Democratic Labour Party, and I'm still, let me put this disclaimer up front, I'm still a member of the Barbados Labour Party, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say this, you put a case, especially when Madam Prime Minister said, hey, the party that receives the second most vote should got a seat in the Senate.
Right.
You was all for that, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying if Madam Prime Minister recognized that, if you also as opposed to recognize that,
mm-hmm.
It also tells me that the Democratic Labour Party still have a fan base and a community base.
I agree.
And I am saying that to be fair, I think that you should involve the Democratic Labour Party in it.
But
I
how can you legitimately involve the Democratic Labour Party
in an
institution in which it has no representation, which is at the constituency base? And let's be clear, the Prime Minister has said that the DLP should be represented in the upper house, and I agree with her. But she was also equally clear that there's no role for the Democratic Labour Party in the lower house because they have not been elected.
I agree with that.
Right, so which is fine, and this is a lower house matter. So the lower house MPs are the people who deal with the distribution of goods and services. Do you think that any of those MPs are going to be so nasty and petty to say that this is only money for bees?
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hello. Peter, I want to say this to you, right?
Sure.
I cannot call one single person that is the Democratic Party, and I know a lot of them, okay? Either wrong them longer than either wrong the bees. I know a lot of them. I cannot recall or cannot point to one single Democratic Labour Party supporter or member that received any goodies during this COVID situation. I have, I can't tell you, but I could call at least about 10 BLP members that get assistance. That the foolishness that's going on, Peter, and you need to take your head out the cloud.
All right. I just got a note that apparently the Sandy Lane Trust set criteria for the vouchers. One of the criteria is that the family must have children under the age of 18. Right?
How do they police that?
I don't know. I read in what was sent to me that the trust has given the money and has set the criteria for the vouchers, and that the vouchers are to be right. Apparently, the Sandy Lane Trust gave vouchers of $100. The vouchers were given to the 30 politicians. So your suggestion about the vouchers actually is what was followed. It wasn't that they get cash. They got vouchers of $100.
That they get a full basket of...
They get vouchers. They get vouchers.
For $100?
They get vouchers for $100. That's what I'm being told here. And that the vouchers were given to the 30 politicians. I guess if it's 100, it's 50, what? 500 No, $500 vouchers. Yeah, right. $500 vouchers that each of these 30 would have gotten. Okay. That's how apparently it is being done. I don't know about the policing, but that's basically the way it works. You know what we really need in Barbados? We need a constituency based arrangement, like a constituency council, right? We need something that is localized, that you can say you have representatives from the community, like elders in the community. You know, in my community, Miss P is one of the elders. Those are the kinds of people that you will have on a council, and that council will determine who they need. So if there's an old lady that they know has not been eaten, they would be in a position to respond to her. The challenge is that we don't have it. And until we have it, we need another mechanism.
The fisher a man last Sunday night on CBC Channel 8, a man, a community man, and I sure you know this guy, named Pearson Bellamy, right, from St. John. Oh, you know the guy?
I know of him, yeah.
A very active, community-spirited man, right? Mm-hmm. I hope one of these days somebody blessed him in 90 or something.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I think it's people like Pearson Bellamy in every community that you can find.
Right.
Okay.
And in due course, we will, because my sense is that Dennis is telling me we got to go, but my sense is that that's what the community council effort was about. But it got thwarted. And okay, I think we need another mechanism that can insert people like the Bellamy guy into a legitimate agency. But until then, yeah, we got to work with what we have. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. It was good chatting. Down to brass tacks. 4341790. Good morning.
Peter?
Hey, morning, Miss P. How are you doing? Sorry, morning, Winnie.
Oh, yes. Hello to Miss P and everybody, and to you. Mr. Johnson, thanks for being very nice to me. Peter, thank you, and the other moderator. I won't be calling back this calling program until January, if God spare my life. And
what happened? You're going away?
No. And the trouble is... unless somebody come in and say something very nasty about me, right, I will come in. But I'm giving it a break until January, if the Lord spare my life. Yeah. Miss Peter, just this gentleman just talked now that no DLP get anything. Well, I know Kerry Simmons is giving out, because I'm getting calls from people are saying Kerry is giving to DLP people, and he shouldn't have said, why not? They're all Bajan and they're down and, they're poor and they need help. He's giving them vulture. He's giving them like the grocery. And I said, so why shouldn't he give? You know, so I am so happy that he's not seeing between the colors. He's seeing people.
The need. Seeing the need. Yeah.
To his workers, I know Jefferson, Kevin is working very hard with E, and they're doing a fantastic job. And I know they're tired because they got to be going out there every day in the community. They might miss a few people, and I know they're going back to them, you know. So, because when they go and they're not home, they got to move on to somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing a good job. Anyway, Peter, thanks for being nice to me. Yeah.
All right, Miss Winnie, I look forward to chatting with you again. You said you're going to be off until January. I know from time to time you need to take a sabbatical and recharge. I suspect that I will be having one soon too, as soon as this COVID thing clears up. So yeah, I wish you all the best, and I look forward to being around, as you say, if God spare. Thanks again, Winnie, for calling. Good morning and welcome. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Okay, 4341790, you can call us. We have lots of WhatsAppers talking about the issues, certainly, of the contributions from the Sandinian Trust, insisting that the vouchers are for $50 and not $100. Other people are saying that since there's no constituency council, we would need to have it, and others. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning. Good morning and welcome.
Yeah, good morning, sir. This is Glenn Clark.
Yeah, hey, morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
I have been a member of parliament for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as you rightly pointed out today, when we become elected, we do not see B or D. We do not see political class. I do not. I personally do. I have never done it. But what I would want to say here, that I heard Wesley today complaining about the Sandilian Charitable Trust. And I would want to suggest to him that before people come on the radio and talk, they need to find the information, need to find the truth for the whole thing. The trust gives vouchers. That is the first thing. And it works out to every constituency were given the same amount, which worked out to about $16,600.
But per constituency? 50,
each constituency.
Okay. And you got, there were $50 or $100 voucher?
$50 vouchers.
Okay.
$50 vouchers.
But you could give two to one person.
Right. And they had strict guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the listeners to bear this in mind. Strict guidelines, which you had to follow. They were supposed to be given to families with children.
Under 18.
They were not supposed to be given to any person over 18, children under 18 years old, mm-hmm. with no income. That includes national insurance, pension. They had to be given to poor families, and it was specific.
Okay.
The guidelines were specific, and they sent each member of parliament strict guidelines, which we had to follow. My office were given these vouchers last Tuesday. And by weekend, we had distributed all of the vouchers.
So you don't have any left?
We don't have any left. We distributed to 125 families across St. George North. 125 families. And how we did it, huh? Let me explain what we did.
Please do. Yeah.
We had a person with one child was given two vouchers. Person with two children were given three vouchers. A person with three children were given three vouchers. A person with four and above were given four vouchers. Five children, four vouchers. In other words, the trust says you should only give out $200 to any one family. That was the maximum that we had to give out.
Mm.
And we complied with that thing. We had persons across, we have nine boxes in St. George, as you know. And we were able to have captains, we were able to have persons across in each district who were able to tell us who were the marginal, vulnerable families in those districts. And we were able to check each one. Persons came to the office and my secretary record them by ID card. We never asked them if they were B or D. Persons received them. And all the families received them and were very happy. It was the very first time that we were able to give out over $16,000 in less than a week time. I have, as I said to you, Peter, I have been around for a long time. Parliamentarians are given an allowance every month, which we give out. The public don't know this. But we give out quietly. I don't go on the radio and say who I give families to. I have never done it. I have never gone on the radio, the newspaper, and take a picture and say, I've given this family, because they're vulnerable people. But we give every month. And the system is clear to me in this COVID time to give to the constituency office rather than to the welfare or to the other agencies of government that are not coming out during COVID time. We were able to give out in less than 5 days my vouchers, and I believe other constituencies have done the same thing. There's a mechanism. Every constituency has an office. And we have an idea of who are the vulnerable people. I am not saying that everybody got it, because I'll tell you this now, only this morning, about four or five families call us and say, look, we have nothing to eat. So I know the system. I know it's not perfect. But at the same time, we were able to give out the vouchers to the most needy of the constituency across Barbados. And members must take it from that for what it's worth.
Mm.
So, I mean, I don't want members to distort this thing, because there were clear indications, there were clear guidelines which members of parliament have to follow. And we never asked who are B or D. Now, what else can we do? I mean, what else can this trust do?
No, I don't. I mean, yeah, Ms. Clark, I don't have a difficulty with what you're saying, because I appreciate that in St. George North, There's no other community-based organization that you could say that has the knowledge of where the vulnerable persons. You have identified 9 boxes, and you're saying the best thing to do is make sure you spread them out over the 9 boxes so that everybody in the area gets something. The boxes are almost equally sized, not often, not all, but they are almost equally sized. And that's the best kind of delineation
and,
to work
and
with
the
it.
Truth of the matter is, and the truth of the matter is, I have won most of the, I have won all the boxes.
That ain't relevant in this instance, though.
But the thing is this, but what I'm saying is this, that in the weakest box I had, we were able to give out more boxes,
more vouchers
in that particular. That's the reason why I made the point. We were able to give out more in that particular box than any other box.
Because there were more people who qualified.
More people qualified.
Okay. What,
there,
what?
Obviously, there will be some that you have not, we have not picked up. And this trust is going to give out 50,000 vouchers, dollars and vouchers, over a 6-week period.
Okay, excellent.
Every 2 weeks. So that we may very well miss somebody in the first round.
You can get them in
but
the second.
But let's suppose this person receives NIS. This person does not qualify in the second round. And this is what the trust has said. Once the person has any form of income, they're not supposed to be receive their money. And we stuck to the guidelines, and we appreciated what was happening, and we knew we did our best.
What has it been like, though, for you as a member of parliament in these times? I mean, from the beginning when the shutdown occurred, have you been inundated more than others with standard requests that I've been hearing other members of parliament tell me about, people asking for food and so on?
Yes. But persons have been asking. This is the first time in 25 years that we have had such a crisis. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of families who were not working. You may have the odd person who may have want to take advantage, but by and large, there are a lot of people who could not benefit from national insurance. There are a lot of people who have not paid it, self-employed persons especially. So we have to be able to pick up the thing. And I want the public to bear this mind too, that we have to raise funds on a consistent basis to help. We ask for food stuff. We ask persons for food stuff, not cash, to help us help the vulnerable families. Right now, I have to go later today. I'll send my secretary, I should say, to buy food from one of the local supermarkets to distribute to families who are suffering. So we do not only rely on the trust. We do it ourselves.
Under normal circumstances, what kind of demands are made on you as a member of parliament? So in other words, when you have your clinic in a week, That allowance that you receive, which is not a lot of money to start with, what kind of requests are made on that? In other words, what do people come to you and say, Mr. Clark, I need assistance with A, B, and C? And I'm asking you to do that because I would like to hear a comparison to what it has been like now in this thing.
Right. Most of the time, persons want to have light bills pay, water bills. They want to have food stuff. They want to have Pampers for their children.
Right. Okay.
They want to have pampers for the elderly. Mm-hmm. They want to have somebody might go in overseas, a sporting club, might go in somewhere, might want a ball, they might want a bat. Mm-hmm. You might have some persons with chronic disease. You might want the health person want to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. We are
taxi or medication,
all
things
types
like that.
Of problems. Mm-hmm. My secretary occasionally have to carry people to the district hospital, the polyclinic up here. She have to carry the hospital. We do. My office is constantly open. We have a full-time secretary. Yeah.
Compared to now, what has the difference been now?
Well, the difference is now because of this shutdown quickly. It was shut down. People were not planned for it. So a number of persons could not even go to the bank. A number of persons could not get the national insurance. It wasn't something that you had to plan. Mm-hmm. So people were suffering immediately. There are a lot of people who could not, and I have made a point. I made a point to my own government that one of the things I thought should have happened is that the supermarket should have remained open from day one because I knew the problem. People could not get into the market, so they wanted food. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see that we have corrected that and persons are now going to the supermarket, going to the food center to collect food because that's the basic need. Many people cannot get food, they feel badly. And we have still, I would like to see the government take more money and put into the welfare system in order to help families. Because when the trust pull out in 6 weeks' time, what happens? there's still going to be a number of persons who have been getting food for the first time for a long time. They saw the vouchers. A lot of people who don't get it. I saw an old man in my village pushing over the fire. I haven't seen him since my grandmother died several years ago. So we have poverty in Barbados that we have to correct, and we have to do it fast. You see? So I am very appreciative, and I want to make this quite clear. I'm very appreciative, and I want to tell Wesley and all those critics out there, I'm very happy that the Trust was able to send the funds to the constituency offices in order to help the poor people of this country, the poor people, the children. I have called, Peter, I have called years ago. I remember years ago myself and going after had a tangle on this, that we need to have mothers' allowances for mothers, because I hate to hear to see families suffer, and families suffer because of their children. So, you know, when a child cries, mother cries.
I am basically agreeing that the constituency approach is not an ideal one, but I think the constituency approach is one that we gotta live with under the circumstances. I received a WhatsApp, and I'll ask you largely because you're here with me on the phone now to respond to this lady. She sends me a picture of a voucher, and it has in some eggs, toilet paper, some oil, a little like potatoes, rice. A snack for the kids, a couple cans of stuff, and salt bread, and white flour. I don't know why they don't use brown flour, but anyhow. And her thing is that she has 10 people in the house, none of them are working, and that's all they sent for her. How is she supposed to cook and share this? What do you say to a lady like this?
This was not a boat. This was a hamper.
She got a hamper.
Yeah, sometimes the constituency office can only give out what they have.
Yeah.
For example, in my house today, you won't find any food. Sometimes I have had many constituents come to me, and I didn't have in the office, and they went home at me and collect whatever I ever had. Mm-hmm. If I had only sugar and rice, they collected that.
Mm-hmm.
If I had only eggs, they collected what I had. So therefore, the person must understand that if the constituency office only has that, this is what they give. But we give out everything that we have, and we do not give them to families. None of my families got a single voucher.
Mm-hmm.
I can swear on my children. Like,
is this individuals?
Yeah, none of my family got these. They were given to poor families across the constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the members of the public to understand they were given to who they were designed to give. They were not given for the old elderly, because we raised funds separate and distinct for that class of person. It was given for persons with children, without income. And that's the important thing, without income. They were not supposed to be receiving NIS, pension, or any form of income. And we stuck to that arrangement, Peter.
All right. I want to thank you, sir, for calling and giving a bit of the experience. I in all of this, I have been trying very hard to let people understand the tremendous pressure that representatives like yourself have been brought under. A few of the MPs have spoken to me personally, and I appreciate how hard it has been for them.
After I heard the call-in program for the last 2 days, I listened to the program. I don't get into often because it's difficult to get into a program.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to get into this to correct some of the misunderstanding of persons. But I am saying it's a good program. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Thank you for calling, sir. As I said, you know, it's been a rough time for all of us. And I do feel that at the bottom of it, we appreciate whatever assistance has been offered. But it can't be easy. It really can't be easy.